Hey friends, welcome to Mentality of Combat Sports Podcast, number like 100 or something. I don't know how many we've done. We should go back and count though. It'll be interesting. David Mullins, sports psychology consultant, davidmullinssportspsychology.com, and David Mullins MMA on Twitter. I'm Robin Black MMA on Twitter. It's my birthday today. By the time you're watching this, it probably isn't, but August 10th was my birthday. And so I'm hanging out with David, and we're going to talk about fighting and things related to the psychology and mentality and of fighting. I'm sure we'll talk a lot about Conor and Diaz.
Yeah.
But what's going on with you? Everything good?
Yeah, everything is good. I'm just excited for this fight. It's funny how something like this can just be the thing that everyone seems to be looking forward to. You know, it's just caught people's imagination like not many other things have. So even in my house, everyone's a big Conor fan, and obviously
you guys are all Irish.
We're all Irish. We're all biased.
Yeah.
But everyone's just so invested and excited. Like it's kind of special, this matchup.
This is something I talked to Ramdeen about and Pollock, and if the last time they fought, it happened in a week, so it was like super hot.
Yeah.
Everything kind of burned. If you booked this fight and you had 10 or 11 or 12 weeks. Everybody would be super pumped because of who these guys are, the way that they interact, you know, their fighting styles as well as their personalities. So just if you had a couple of months to let it sink in, people would be pumped. But we also have 9 minutes and 12 seconds of them actually fighting.
Yeah, and it was awesome.
And it was awesome. And the dynamic was really weird and interesting, and it went up and it went down, and the momentum that Conor was on, knocking out Aldo and looking unstoppable, a lot of people, we believed he was going to win.
Yeah.
I sat with Brian Stann and we talked about it for 30, 40 minutes doing a tandem breakdown. We both thought, a lot of people thought he would win.
Yeah.
Diaz was not surprised, motherfuckers. So you have all of that now. And changes and questions and debate, and so it makes it a freaky fight.
Yeah. Like that's a good way of looking at this one, is if we look at Conor's perspective before the first fight, and then straight after the first fight, and now heading into this one, and Nate the same way, before the first fight, straight after, and now heading into this one. Because when we do that, when we look through it, it's so different now than what it was. Just from a mental perspective, everything is completely different. So Conor first, heading into the first fight, was on the crest of a wave, unstoppable. This phenom, we've never seen anything like it, knocked out Jose Aldo in 13 seconds after just tearing through the division champion, ready to take on Dos Anjos to become a two-weight world champion. Everything is just, you know. And then Dos Anjos gets pulled out. Nate Diaz comes in and is like, I don't care, whoever. I'll knock anyone out.
Which he had done repeatedly in his career.
Yeah.
Mendez on a few days' notice.
Yeah.
You know, the story goes when he looks up and he's like, who? They're all the same.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And that same situation, one he'd been in many times.
Yeah. And even the thing with the weight, it was supposed to be 155, and then there was some, like, going to make it 160. He's like, just make it welterweight. If that's as the story goes, that's what happened. Because he didn't care. He just thought, I'll knock any man out. And there was a lot of reason for him to believe that was the case, having knocked everyone out, except Max. And then it just, knowing how he was doing against bigger guys in the gym, and knowing how his shots affected them and everything like that, he had a lot of reason to why he could think he could just go in and just destroy Nate Diaz in one round, which is what he thought he would do.
The evidence that he had compiled to that point said that he could do that.
Yeah. So that's where he was. And if you look back, the weight was a different thing now. There was no weight cut. Getting to 145 is tough for Conor. Everyone can see that on the scales when he weighs in. But there was none of that anymore. There was no need for that strict discipline in the build-up. It's something Dominic Cruz touched on heading into the first fight, wondering if that's going to affect Conor. And I'm sure it did, where there was no need for that strict discipline. There was no
intensity.
Need for that edge and that little bit of meanness that comes out of having to do a weight cut. And you get your reward then when you weigh in and you get replenished and you're ready to go, and you've got that bit of an edge just there. That wasn't there.
There is a – and people who have fought and cut weight. And by the end, I was cutting a lot of weight. Ramdeen sat with me as I cut 18 pounds in a day, maybe 16 by the time I got up that morning. And there is a pre-fight victory that you feel when you step on the scale.
Yeah.
I accomplished a very, very, very hard goal. I did it. I feel great. There's almost a celebratory vibe to that dinner that you have after,
yep.
which is really interesting in, you know, whether medieval times or the Game of Thrones
the
scenario.
Before
exactly.
the battle.
Yeah.
yeah.
With all your people.
Yeah.
You know, that all happens, and he didn't go through any of
that. No, he didn't, and he didn't have any of that because he'd been having that feast every night for weeks because it didn't matter. So he was going to make 155 pretty comfortably, and 170 was he weighed in 168 on the day. He didn't need to do anything. So that was different, and was definitely a part of the fight. But then, well, we'll get into Conor now because it's still the same weight class.
Now, if so, these little things, I think this is an important distinction to make. They might not matter. So we're not saying, oh, man, he didn't have his pre-fight thing, so there's his reason. They shouldn't matter.
No, no, no.
They shouldn't.
He knew the fight was going to be at 170, so he needs to adjust his mindset so that he comes in with that same sharpness and edge and that meanness anyways.
And if these things do affect you in some way, that's not an excuse of any kind that you're allowed. That is 100% your fault.
Yeah, you just have. Yeah, it's your fault because you haven't made the adjustments. So they are real, but you can make adjustments and still have that same sharpness of mind ready
Which
to go in.
Maybe they didn't. Maybe he. Because having never had that experience before, you might think you're making adjustments.
Yeah.
But not actually make them.
Yeah, exactly. You know? Yeah. So that's part of the pre-fight, first fight for Conor. Another part of it for Conor, looking back now, is the verbal sparring and the trash talk, how it wasn't affecting Nate,
yeah.
and had affected everyone else that he'd fought. So that was different as well, you know, going up against Nate, where he genuinely doesn't care about that stuff. He actually enjoys it, and he gets something out of it himself. Then that was a different thing as well for this fight, for the first fight heading into it.
And that again should be fine.
Yeah.
You should be able to try your games. It has no effect. That lack of effect on my opponent should in no way affect me if I'm prepared properly.
Yeah, exactly. It might have surprised you the first time, but then, okay, well, that's not going to be part of this fight anymore compared to the other ones. So then just make the adjustments. And again, that may be part of the story of this fight heading into this one. So that's a lot of the story for Conor. Just that feel of invincibility that was there was a big part of it, and then maybe a lack of maybe a little complacent towards Nate and what Nate could bring heading in as well.
Before we go on, whether you'll probably discuss Nate's perspective next.
Yeah.
Before we do, I want to ask, there's a couple of things that you mentioned. So that feeling of invincibility.
Yeah.
We have seen times where maybe you could say accidentally or in whatever way, it's actually been very beneficial for people, right?
Yeah. Anderson.
That. Or even there are scenarios. There was a Bellator fight where the guy knocked out Joe twice.
Now, one in kickboxing and one in MMA.
Yeah. Now, I'm not saying he's not a brilliant kickboxer, but he's not Joe.
Yeah.
But if he believes that everything that he's committing to, he commits with true belief, you can knock out Joe Schilling twice.
Yeah.
I mean, it's hard. I don't want to say he's not Joe. He's not as good a kickboxer as Joe Schilling because he knocked him out twice.
Yeah.
But on paper, if you look just skill for skill and fight for fight, he isn't.
Yeah.
But his belief that he could knock him out was a big part of him knocking him out.
Yeah.
So there are times that's valuable. But then there are times where something we've talked about before, being too, whether arrogant or whatever the word is, if you think you don't need to work anymore, you're fucked.
You're completely screwed.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter what you've done before. If you're not ready to go for this one, it's not going to work out. The thing what you're saying about Joe Schilling and I can't think of the guy's name.
I can't either. I apologize.
I wish I could.
Me too.
We should, because he beat him twice.
Exactly. Exactly. He made his name by beating Joe Schilling twice, except for we can't remember his name.
Yeah,
I feel bad.
But there's two parts of that. Obviously, there's him feeling like, I can go in and beat this guy, and he does, and then I feel like I can do it again. There's also, like, every fight, there's two guys in there. Yeah. So it matters if Joe thought, this guy can't knock me out. And then if he thinks, oh, he got lucky, he's not going to do it again.
Yeah, this is kickboxing. This is my game. He can't do it.
So it's one is up and the other is down kind of thing. Both impact each other. We saw it with Rockhold Bisping. We saw it with Aldo Edgar. Mm-hmm. All those rematchy type fights where it matters a lot, and we'll get into that coming up to Conor Nate heading into this fight, where it matters a lot how they're looking at the first fight and what they took from it. Mm-hmm. Can you think of anything else for Conor heading into the first fight that we haven't mentioned?
Well, I mean, we could probably take the hour and a half if we wanted to and just dig in. But as far as, like, the...
Have we missed anything big?
The big... the swing of momentum that he was on, even that alone, we're supposed to not ride momentum, right?
Yeah, no.
You know? Yeah. There are times where momentum feels like a good thing. It's like... And Ramdeen and I have this conversation often. It's like, he's like, well, why don't we want to ride momentum? I mean, we're on a roll.
Yeah.
Well, that's good. But if we ride momentum when it goes the other way, if we're momentum riders, when it goes the other way, it spirals out of control.
Yeah.
And so we actually don't want – and momentum can make you complacent. So we actually don't want it even when it's good, right?
Yeah,
or,
yeah.
Cool, I've won 9 fights in a row, but I'm not on a roll, right?
Yeah, I've been ready for every single one of those fights. I've brought my best performance, and I'll do the same for the next one. They're all individual events, each of those fights. That's something I always talk about with fighters I work with. So that's a big part of it too. Like, even going, it's not just the Aldo fight, it's the run that he was on.
Yeah.
You can get caught up on the momentum of that.
And the last relevant thing that we were just touching on, this idea... Ego is a very strange thing. The more you see people study themselves, it pops up as a part of the conversation. Because if you think you're great at something, you not only can get complacent, but really you're not. Because whatever the ceiling is, whoever the best swimmer is, that's not the best swimmer that humans can be. That's just what we've got to. If you think you're the best, you may limit yourself from how much further you're able to grow. If you think you're an expert on something, you know, and so ego and not overly thinking you're great seems to be a weird kind of key in there.
Yeah,
somewhere.
You have to always be setting higher standards for yourself. Like, you should be, again, this is one of the things that I always talk about fighters, you should be better for your next fight than you were for your last one because of the work you've done in between, because you should be aiming to improve in between, and then the standard you set yourself for this next one should be higher than the last one because you're better now. But if you just start to think that you're on top and unbeatable and all this kind of stuff, then what's the point in growing or looking to improve or kick on, even coming in at 100%, because 70% will do the business. So that's something that people can fall into. There was a lot going on heading into that one for Conor. The short notice aspect of it as well, like, was a part of it where he thinks, I've been preparing for a fight, Nate's coming in off the beach. Maybe that's a part of it as well. So the flip side then, Nate heading in to the first fight, he gets a call 11 days out or whatever it is, or 12 days out, do you want this fight? And of course he wants this fight. You know, he's excited by it. He has wanted that fight for a while. It's a big money fight for him, more than he's ever got paid before. It's a guy who he thinks he can beat. It almost felt like he knew he could beat him, because he's been calling him out for a while. And it's a fight he's excited by. And Nate needs to be excited for a fight to be able to bring his best performance. And he was very much excited by this fight.
People say this all the time when they watch a scenario of a fight unfold. But I have a feeling that fighters can believe it themselves. And sometimes it can be a good thing. And I think Nate Diaz thought, I got nothing to lose.
Yeah.
And that might be a good thing sometimes. It might be a bad thing other times. I think for Nate Diaz, fighting like you got nothing to lose could just free him up to go fight.
Yeah, yeah.
You know?
Yeah, that tends to be the way he fights at his best. But I do believe he thought he could beat mm-hmm. Conor. I thought he thought he was better than Conor on the feet and on the ground. That's what I've got from him mm-hmm. In the pre and post for that fight. And his lifestyle and the way he eats and trains and it's a year round kind of a guy. The short notice fight is much less of an impact for a guy like him than say maybe a Chad Mendes who is
an athlete.
A bit more of a camp fighter than a lifestyle guy. If that,
right.
You know.
Yeah. He goes in, he does eight hard weeks, he makes weight, he gets ready, he fights, he gets paid.
Yeah.
Yes. True.
So Nate lives that martial arts lifestyle a lot of the time and the conditioning work he does outside. So he's able to take that fight and still be confident, not just take it and just take it for the money. He can take it and be confident that he can go in. So he would have been feeling some of that too. Let's think as well. There was no real pressure on Nate heading into that fight. You know, it's just this is a fun fight, getting paid. I'm going to go in there and surprise people. And so there's the expectations that everyone else had were on Conor.
Yes.
They weren't on Nate, except for the hardcore Diaz fans.
Yeah. Just a little side on something you talked about, his lifestyle. Him and Nick are kind of endurance athletes.
Yeah.
Did you happen to see what Matt Hughes said about endurance athletes? So we were talking about ego. Matt Hughes says now he's training for a 100-mile super marathon himself. And he talked about the suffering and the mental stress of having to overcome yourself in that scenario. And I keep my phone here for the purpose of hearing how much time we have left. And every now and again it'll ring. That's my wife. It's my birthday. he talked about how it's harder, mentally way harder. The demands of being an endurance athlete are hard. And he said, in relation, going in and trying to outsmart another man in a cage is much easier. Mm. It's been a long time since he did that. And if he did them in the other order, he might say the other.
Yeah,
do you know what I mean?
They're both taxing.
Yeah, they're both taxing, and they're not really comparable.
Yeah.
One he can taste right this minute as he's doing it. The other one's a memory that he maybe, it wasn't that tough. I'll just go fight George St.
Pierre.
If he used to be an endurance athlete and now he was fighting, he could very easily say the other.
Yeah.
But his point was that there are a lot of mental demands of running up 100 miles or marathons or triathlons that these guys do. And that alone, I think, adds to that mentality of Diaz. Also, somebody asked me this question online. When you get on a bike and you cycle 100 miles or you run any of these things, a lot of the terminology that the athletes use, they go, we're going to get on the bike and suffer.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Yeah, oh, yeah.
Yeah, that
every
is,
Tour de France guy, I've heard them say the word suffer at some stage.
Or they'll say, I don't know why Armstrong, when he came back before he got dinged for the sauce, when he came back, people were like, I don't know why this guy, he's rich and he's successful. Why does he want to get on the bike and suffer? They just identify it as that. And that suffering, I think, on some level, adds to that ability to walk through, take shots if you're still conscious, and be pushed hard in the fight.
100%. That's one of the things that people miss about conditioning work. Like they think of it as, well, you're better conditioned physically to be able to go. But mentally, you're better conditioned as well. Where you get to that point where you're tired and you know that it's like there's a difference between being tired and being exhausted.
Mm-hmm.
And some fighters mistake being tired and thinking they're exhausted. And then it just spirals and they don't trust the recovery. They haven't understood that you're going to get to that point, but you're going to pass through that point to another point, and then you'll get to another stage where you feel like you've got nothing left in the tank and your arms are heavy and all that stuff. When you keep going, you'll continue to go. Where the endurance stuff that Nick and Nate do, they've felt that loads of times. You know? So that is a definite benefit of doing that work, not just physically but mentally, being able to push through and almost relish that point, because this is something like I've got some fighters that I work with that are super conditioned and they pride themselves on that fitness level that they have. So they want to use that as a weapon in the fight, where they can take guys to places where the other guy might not know how he's going to react, whereas the guy who is conditioned and everything knows how he's going to just keep going and he's going to push through that. So you want to drag them into places they don't want to be, or maybe they don't even know they don't want to be there yet.
Two things, and then I'm sorry to keep derailing the story, but so many interesting little tidbits are popping up along the way. One, Court McGee, Ramdeen and I talked to him on Five Rounds today, the last one, and that's exactly what he talked about. And he talked – it's a good one if people want to check it out. He talked about the types of training that he does to put himself in these terrible – physiological situations and fight through it.
Yeah.
So he's literally training to be in the worst scenario, and he's going to take you there.
Yeah.
And then you're not trained to be there. You're not confident there. Yeah. You don't physically know how to do it.
It can be an unknown thing.
Yeah.
To some guys, where they haven't even experienced it. They didn't know it was part of the sport yet.
Yeah.
You know, that's the pressure some guys can put on, and then they don't know how to react because they've not been there. And it's not. I mean, we're not talking about like 15 rounds of sparring. We're real conditioning work.
Yeah.
That can be enough. The long distance stuff
for the
heavy, heavy workload in a session.
The anaerobic training too is brutal. The 30 seconds on and 30 seconds off of the highest intensity you can do, and you're doing say 7 or 11 of those. 30 on, 30 off doesn't sound like a lot, but if you're maxing out. Trying to recover, and you're on 3 and it's killing you, and you got to get to 11, you just have to do it.
Yeah.
It's really, really cool. People should try that one.
Yeah.
But the other thing before we get back to the path that we're on is when people – I haven't heard this talked about. I'm sure it has been on some level. But when Connor talked about panic mode and when people have heard that discussed, I think people – he knows – and I'm sure that this is what he means. But part of the panic mode was exactly what we're talking about right now. That, oh, I'm hurt. He's coming on.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't have enough energy to do it.
And before that, he's been taking my heavy shots and he's still there. And he's
now I'm weaker.
Yeah.
I'm weaker and more tired.
Yeah.
So that panic mode, I think, was he was blasted in the head and he was hurt. But I think it was the panic of, oh, shit, it's going up, I'm going down, I don't know what to do, and your brain panics.
And plus, and this is a big, big part of that, he wasn't expecting to have to go to that place.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you're expecting to have to go to that place, then it's easier to get through it. Mm-hmm. He was expecting to go in and just first round the guy.
Yeah.
So, you know, just land that big shot. Didn't expect to have to dig deep, which is different now. You know?
Yes.
But that's a part of why what Connor described as that panic set in.
That's very interesting. Weidman told Ramdeen, asked him, you know, are you prepared to go further than you've been, be pushed? And he's like, he goes in almost, you don't want to say with the desire to get there or the hope that you're going to get there, but he goes in knowing tonight we're going to go to the furthest places and kind of not only accepting it, but embracing that.
Yeah.
Like when we're talking about the things I'm going to do tonight, one day we're going to be talking about my ability to go to places that would, you know, that kind of idea.
I want them to get to the point where they relish it, not even embrace it. They relish that. Like there's one guy that I work with, and he loves that point where he gets in a fight where he gets to that stage where he knows he's pushing himself, and he knows that he is tired, but and the pace is he prides himself on wanting to keep that pace and maintain that pace, and knowing that if it's the last minute of the last round, he's still going to be there at that same tempo, looking to push it and break the guy even then. So that's something that something that can be worked on and developed and trained, but you have to be willing to put yourself there. Physically with the work, you can't just decide to do that.
Yeah,
you have to have the work put in to be conditioned to be able to do that. But mentally, you have to be in a place where you want to do it and you're willing to go and do it, and you know what it's going to feel like, and you can trust yourself to keep going. So that's something that Nate had over Connor in the first fight, and it's one of the things that's fascinating heading into this one, the adjustments Connor has made in terms of preparation and everything, and now if he's willing to and able to and set to go into that same place Nate went to.
So we've kind of covered where they were before that fight.
There's more on Nate though as well. Like if we go back a little bit more, because so there's the one of the big things for me with Nate was that he was ready and prepared for what Connor brought. Connor wasn't ready and prepared for what Nate brought. Connor expected Nate to just not be able to take his power. No one can, and then that's it. Nate knew what Conor was bringing, not just technically and physically, mm-hmm. but mentally. Nate had seen how Conor had broken past opponents. Mm-hmm. He had seen what he had done to Dustin, to mm-hmm. Chad, to, you know, to Aldo. And he knew what he was doing because he had tried to do it himself to mm-hmm. other guys. He knew the tactic, and he was ready for it. He was prepared for it. He knew it wouldn't work on him. That was a big part of that first fight. Mm-hmm. Even in the first press conference, he knew, you're going to talk some shit. I'm going to talk some shit back. Mm-hmm. And
this is irrelevant to me.
Yeah. I'm still going to go in there, and you're not going to get to me at all. And so he was ready for that. That to me was a huge part of the first fight.
It was an enormous part of it. We went back and looked when he beat Michael Johnson, and he was like, you beat every one of these guys before they got in the cage.
Yeah.
So there's two things about that. One, you're absolutely right. He identified it because he knew it.
Yeah.
It's a game he and his brother and the people around them have understood since they were teenagers.
Yeah.
And I talked about this with and it's the very same thing, only mentally instead of physically. When TJ fought Dominic Cruz, the games that TJ was trying to play on Cruz didn't work. The same way that if we're two magicians, we can't – and I go pick a card, any card. You're like, are you fucking serious?
Yeah.
I know the game.
That was a show, Penn –
In Britain.
Try and fool him.
Yeah.
And it didn't work.
You cannot – an illusionist or a magician knows exactly the whole game that the other one is doing. So if we go to Chase or, you know, anybody at home and we're a magician and we show them the thing, oh, my God, that guy did magic.
Yeah.
Another magician is like, he moved this thing, the timing, he made him look over here. It's all very obvious to him. And it's the same thing with Dominic Cruz and TJ Dillashaw. Cruz understood Dillashaw's goals and his games as well as Dillashaw did, and vice versa, which made that interesting. And right here, Nate Diaz understood entirely the magic Buffalo, New York. Sorry, my phone doesn't normally ring while we're chatting. He understood the games that he was playing, so it became impossible to play them.
Yeah.
Whereas Conor, I don't think identified that he was trying to bullshit another bullshitter.
Yeah.
I think he just thought he was another guy. This always works. It'll work on him.
And like that can be understandable in a way because Conor is better at talking, mm-hmm. you know. But mm-hmm. at the mental mm-hmm. games and the mind games and that warfare beforehand, they're on the same playing field, you know. Mm-hmm. It's different. So just because the lines are funnier and better, and it's not that he's saying lines, he's just being himself, but he is.
He's got a natural sense of humor and poetry to the way he speaks.
Nate doesn't necessarily have that, but he's just as aware of how that all works and how to do it and what the other guy's trying to do, like you're saying. So that was a big part of the first fight. And it's a big part of the second fight now because we'll get to it, but we can see the adjustments that have already been made. It's different now.
So we were going to talk a little bit about curiosity today, and the reason I keep interrupting you or keep stopping your path of where you're going is because you keep saying things that are so interesting and curious to me. And so what – if we extrapolate that idea a little bit further, it means on some level that the actual words themselves can be of – less consequence than many of the other things that are happening. So Conor and Nate are both playing games with each other. They're both having a little psionic psychic battle in whatever way, push and pull of intention.
Yeah.
But I'm using complicated words and ideas, and you're going, we're all on steroids, you know, or whatever.
Yeah.
The words themselves are actually much less important than the subtext, the tone, the way you react or the way you're affected.
Yeah. Or the way you're not affected.
Or the way you're not affected.
Probably bigger. Yeah. Nate's funny as hell.
Yeah, he is.
Some of his lines are hilarious.
They're smart too, man. Diaz brothers, in the world of martial arts, like in their specialty, I'm sure they know about a lot of things. Different things too, but in the thing they've dedicated their life to, they're fucking brilliant.
Yeah,
really are.
They get it.
Yeah.
They get what it is.
Yeah.
But yeah, so that's true. Like the how they've been affected and seeing the emotional attachment that Aldo had to Conor and the words Conor was saying, how they were impacting Aldo. It's not necessarily what Aldo was saying back. It's how he was visibly emotionally attached and Nate wasn't. Nate was just enjoying it. So that was a big factor that. That's going to be, I think it's different heading into this one. So that's pre-fight. I don't know if there's anything else.
Oh, I'm sure pre-fight. There's tons more. But and sorry to keep derailing where you're going, but I think you did a pretty good job of laying out some of the mindset that they may, it with 2020 vision in retrospect, that they may have approached.
One other thing, because it's key coming into this one, maybe, possibly, is Nate's chip on his shoulder too. That was going into the first fight, you know, where Conor's the guy who's getting paid huge money. Mm-hmm. Conor's the one who's getting all the attention. Conor said it recently. Nate has had more UFC fights than Conor's had fights.
Really?
That's what Conor. Yeah. I didn't look it up, but I trust Conor's.
Because he's 19-3. That would mean Diaz has had 23 UFC fights, which is certainly possible, but very getting there, anyways. Yeah. And he probably has.
Yeah. So
crazy.
So that's, you know, the chip on his shoulder. That why not me yet? Why am I getting this money? Why am I getting so badly paid? Why am I getting big opportunities? So that chip on his shoulder might have been there a little bit too. And it's like, I get to take what you have. And make it mine now. It's like Highlander. Remember that show, Highlander, where you take
his
power?
There can't be only one.
Yeah, but when you get his head, you take his power as well.
Yeah.
that's what Nate was trying to do.
Yeah.
So that's part of it. Then, if we go, like, during the fight, there was a lot going on mentally, where Conor had a very good first round, but Nate was prepared for that. Nate, like you pointed out in the breakdown, kept interrupting him. And
people might not have seen my breakdown.
Well, they should check
it
out.
You've seen it.
Yeah.
You've seen it. It's not up yet. I've actually, I've got two breakdowns, one from each guy's perspective. So if you're watching this before you've seen those, then they'll come out soon.
Yeah.
But but go on.
Spoiler alert.
Spoiler is good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But Nate was ready to dig deep, and he knows how durable he is himself. Maybe Conor didn't know how durable Nate was. And then Nate started to feel it in the second round. He started to feel, even before he landed that big shot, that big left hand, he started to feel the tempo starting to come out of Conor a little bit. He started to feel him kind of slowing down and breathing heavier. He would have been in there. He would have felt that.
Yeah, you do.
You can feel when a guy is weakening and he's breathing a little different, and he's, you know, the same pop's not there in his shots and everything. Movement's a little more flat-footed now. So he would have, and when he felt that, he immediately turned it on. The hands were up, let's go, and he started slapping, and started talking to him a little more. He started to turn, letting Conor know, you're weakening, I'm strengthening.
Yeah.
So there was a lot of mind games in the fight itself. Conor was trying to knock him out with one shot the whole time, which was like a direct result of his mindset heading in, that he believed he could.
Yeah, and people like me made a big deal out of his left hand, which is impressive. I don't know how many, 17 people been knocked out by that, or 16.
Yeah,
I mean, that's real.
Yeah.
That's real. But it's real because, as you've said many times, of the work he did going into the fight.
Yeah.
It's not real because he's magic.
Yeah.
You know, it's not real because he's just naturally it's real because he prepared, focused, and executed properly. And we take that away, and it's just a really, really hard left hand.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. But it still is. Mm-hmm. You know, he still has to have faith in it and everything like that. Mm-hmm. But so that was a big part of that fight, the way the tactics, how they were attached to the mindset of both guys. Obviously, at the end then, when Nate got the finish, Conor, like he said himself, he had panicked and shot for that takedown, and Nate was ready for it, and got the finish. Just the fact that he finished him alone is a factor too heading into this. You know, it's not that he won; he finished him. He choked him. You know, they made each other bleed in there. They hurt each other in there. Conor cracked Nate with one left hand at one stage where Nate kind of came onto a little bit. It was a beautiful shot.
You'd walked him into it?
Yeah.
I think it's in my breakdown.
It is.
I think it's in my breakdown from both guys.
Yeah, but and that hurt Nate. Mm-hmm. And then obviously Nate hurt Connor a few times.
But Nate took it.
Yeah.
And Aldo didn't.
Yeah.
But the, you know, also in the fight, if I'm the bigger man by quite a bit and I can take shots, I want to be in there. Again, a reference in my breakdown, not from the perspective of the bigger man, but I want to be in there trying to land the last shot in almost every exchange. I'm the bigger guy.
Yeah.
If we end up getting 3 for 3 in tight under pressure, I'll take my 200-pound three over your 170-pound three, particularly if we're kind of unstable during that moment.
Yeah.
So within the fight, size we didn't really touch on, but it's a real factor as well. It can affect their mentality. Connor's always been the bigger guy. And now this guy's the bigger guy.
Yeah.
And Nate is like, I've beaten up guys way bigger than this. It can be a psychological factor, whether you know it or not. You look, that guy's not very big.
Yeah.
I think I can beat him. On some level, people walk through the world thinking that thought.
Yeah. That can be there to some degree, for sure. So the thing, within the fight, there's a lot of ebb and flow in that fight, especially.
Oh, yeah.
It's on YouTube now.
Yeah.
They've got the UFC release it on YouTube. So everyone should just watch that fight. Like, and maybe before they watch the rematch, watch that fight again. Watch it twice like you did. Watch it from Connor's perspective. Watch it from Nate's perspective. Because the ebb and flow of it is incredible. And there's ups and downs. And there's moments where Connor comes back at Nate after Nate has him hurt. And Connor lands some good stuff too. He comes back for a little bit and then Nate comes on again, and it's just the ebb and flow of it all and is incredible. And so they've been there with each other through that together. Yeah. You know, they've had that experience together. So that's a part of this rematch now is just how they've felt each other. They know how strong each other are. They know the way, you know, they've felt each other in a way that you can't have done unless you fight the guy.
Yeah. That ebb and flow you talked about, if you imagine, you know, the energy levels are a red line on a graph. It's moving in a certain way. If you imagine that the psychological levels, it's a different line. All of these things are happening simultaneously.
Yeah.
But the energy level part that was discussed, and Connor talked about it, I think Nate acknowledged it. Essentially, if Nate Diaz fought all the way through the first 7 or 8 minutes at 7. I'm just arbitrarily going to say 7. And Connor tried to fight at 9.
Yeah.
Push, 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 push. 9 eventually gets you to 8, eventually gets you to 7. And the second you get to 6, you're moving that way. It's hard to go. Nate can take it up.
Yeah, he did.
So he didn't just slow down slightly beneath him. He had stuff in the tank to head upwards. And that's part of that panic.
Yeah.
That's part of what created that psychological panic. I'm tired is very, very nerve-wracking in a fight. I'm tired and holy shit, this guy's just coming on. It's a pressure that Connor's probably never experienced, and most of us will never experience in our regular lives. And most fighters, and Nate Diaz, I think, understood that weapon very well.
Yeah, that's to me the key point. Nate knew it so well, and he knew the moment to kind of turn it up a little bit. Mm-hmm. And that's like what we were talking about earlier with the conditioning and being able to push past those. Mm-hmm. He can recognize when the other guy maybe is starting to go down, and that's, he knows he has it in the tank, so he recognizes it. And it's not just that he does it, he lets you know that he's doing it too.
Mm-hmm.
With the talking and the body language and everything, he's letting you know I'm stepping it up now and you can't handle me. I'm recognizing that you're flat here. Started slapping him even more, talking to him even more.
Talking.
Hands were out the way he was throwing his shots. So he had the it's the brilliance of the whole Diaz thing is like Nick did it to Paul Daly too in a way when they fought, where he just knows when to turn it up a little bit more.
That's a crazy fight.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And he did it to Gomi too.
Yeah.
When in that fight, like they turn it up a little bit when they start to notice, like, Gomi was like similar to Connor in a way, loading up on that big shot, but he was noticeably tired. Nick just turned it up a little bit more.
Yeah, you're right.
So they know what they're doing with that. It's you know, it's not just having it, the conditioning. They know when to go, when to put the foot in the gas a little bit more and let you know that they're doing it too. So that's, you know, that's what Nate does brilliantly. That, like, from a mental standpoint, I think that stuff is, you know, fascinating and brilliant at the same time.
And that 100% was the key mental element within that fight.
Yeah.
And I recognized it as keeping it at 7, but turning up the temperature, and if forcing you to be at 9 or 10. No human, and it's not a question of conditioning. Although I heard that Connor, and we'll talk about what they're doing going into this one, but I heard his approach conditioning different. That's great, but it isn't just a conditioning kind of scenario. If no human, regardless of how conditioned you are, can go at 100% for a particular length of time. The body isn't designed that way. That goes for endurance athletes. That goes for every athlete. Take the best endurance athlete in the world and make him run 400 meters at a sprint. He can't do it.
Yeah.
Or 800 meters at a sprint. He can't do it. Conditioning alone doesn't allow that. So if we force you to do that, we'll force you to fatigue, which can be terrifying.
Yeah.
The conditioning element to MMA is really misunderstood. People always say his cardio.
Yeah.
It's not cardiovascular work. There is an aerobic element, but there's also a high anaerobic element. Sprint, recover, sprint, recover, sprint, recover. That sprint is a 80% sprint with recovery. If it's 100% sprint, redlining for too long, the most conditioned athlete in the world will fail.
Yeah.
So that's where the psychology of forcing you to expend beyond what your capacity to recover.
Yeah.
Fascinating stuff.
Yeah. And you can see how the stuff we talked about before the fight, Conor's feeling of invincibility, how he can take him out with one shot, and all the different stuff we just talked about, how that impacted his tactics on the night and how the fight played out. Same for Nate with his. Like, so the mindset going into the fight had a direct correlation to how the fight played out itself. And that's why heading into this rematch now, the adjustments they've made, the way they've looked at it, the mindset heading into the rematch will dictate how the fight goes. And it'll have a big part to play in how they actually go about the actual fight itself heading into this one. And it can be very different, this fight. So that's during the fight and before the fight. Straight after, we'll do straight after, because straight after it can be different to heading in now.
Mm-hmm.
Straight after, for Conor's perspective, it's a shock. First thing, like, it's a shock. It's a big upset. Wasn't expecting that.
I was going to be a two-division champion only a week ago.
Yeah,
I thought that.
Yeah.
Now I lost.
But he took it well as a man and everything. Manned up. Took it well. Took the defeat well. Respectful. Like, as I would have expected him to do. That's the kind of guy he is. Then immediately was recognizing the tactical errors, the mental errors, taking the fight a little bit too lightly, having the expectation that he could go in there and just blow past him, not respecting the bigger man, taking the heavier shots better than the featherweight can.
Yeah. Himself well.
Yeah, yeah. All the stuff that he talked about. So that was in public. And then in private, there would have been some disappointment with it, I'm sure.
Yeah.
Regrets and all that kind of stuff. Yeah. It's, you know, after any loss, it's the same for a guy. It's tough.
Yeah.
It's tough to lose a fight.
Yeah.
Especially when you have been on such a run and you're at the top and everything. So that would have been something to, you know, get over. So that was, you know, that was the immediate, that invincibility is gone.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that feeling that was there is gone. And the confidence takes a hit. Motivation takes a hit. All those things take a hit. So that's immediately after for him. Nate, immediately after. Yeah, I'm not surprised, motherfuckers. I'm not. Like, he wasn't.
He wasn't.
You know?
Yeah.
And now,
if I was partying on the beach a week ago, you could wait to see what I'm going to do now.
Yeah. And in a way, that Highlander thing, he doesn't take all Conor's power, because Conor's still the biggest star. But Nate now, his star has risen so much. And it happened very, very quickly after the fight, where he became this celeb, one of, like, if people had to name, like, just a casual people, like, people watching this can't understand there are people out there who don't know what UFC really is.
Yeah.
But there are lots of those people out there.
Mm-hmm.
But certain fighters cross over, like Ronda Rousey did, Conor McGregor did. Mm-hmm. Nate Diaz is getting to that point where mm-hmm. he's like, Nate Diaz, oh yeah, that's that fighter guy.
Yeah.
You know, people would be aware of him now.
And part of that comes from this kind of win, but yeah. part of it comes from the personality and who the person is. He's so authentic and he's an yeah. individual, which has always been there, which is kind of why, on some level, he thought he deserved
yeah,
this,
yeah.
which is how he swaggered into all these fights. Like, I deserve this.
Yeah.
And he was right. Holly Holm, now, she did lose after defeating Ronda, but she was remembered for that 6 months. And now if you said, who's that? Who's the woman who kicked Ronda Rousey in the head a year later? Not as many people will know the name.
Yeah, yeah.
But she doesn't have this Diaz unique personality.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
So
yeah.
now he kind of got what he was wanting.
Yeah, he got what he wanted. He started to get that respect. It's cool seeing him on those shows, mm-hmm. like on Jimmy Kimmel mm-hmm. and on Conan O'Brien, seeing him hug Dana at 199, all that kind of stuff. That was never there before.
When he gave Dana the Stockton
slap. Yeah, yeah. That was never there before, all that mm-hmm. stuff. So he's enjoying that, and that celeb that's come up, like you can kind of tell that he's loving that and mm-hmm. and all that's coming with it. So that's different for him now. Immediately straight after,
he's got money too.
Yeah, and he's got money for sure. That's a big part of it. And it's kind of this thing of I knew I was going to do it and I did it. So he's vindicated for having felt the way mm-hmm. he did previously. So that's the immediacy of the aftermath of the fight. Now there's been a long time between fights. It doesn't seem like it, but for a fighter in terms of preparation yeah. and everything, because this is a different kind of rematch than lots of rematch, because it's an immediate rematch. Mm-hmm. So they haven't had the chance for other fights to shape their confidence, and they haven't had a chance to work on the things, that the adjustments that they would have learned from the first fight. They haven't had a chance to test those things out and work on them with other opponents, and then it's just straight back in.
Mm-hmm.
And they've been ready for, like, they were ready for 200 when you think about it, and so it got even delayed further. So the prep and the build up for this one has been long for both guys. So now let's do the thing heading into this fight where their mindsets might be, and some of the things that might be key, like we can look back with 2020 vision mm-hmm. in hindsight of what was built up to the first one. Let's try and do that now for heading into this one. Where's Conor at now? Where's Nate at now? What are the things that are
right.
key for them?
And if we get together in 3 weeks, we'll be able to go, was there evidence of these that we saw?
Yeah.
Well, obviously, we've talked about rematches before and how it's a unique event.
Yeah.
But Conor will make a ton of adjustments, which we'll talk about. Do you think Diaz will?
Yeah, I think he will.
Yeah,
I think he will. Like, that's one of the big things for him that he needs to, because I'd like to think he's, from a Nate Diaz perspective, from his, like, if you're part of that team, you look at the fight and, like, you don't just look at the result, you look at the performance, because he did get hit with a lot of shots, you know, and the first round he would have lost that first round.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe he wants that thing of, you know, it'll take me a little time to get into the flow of the fight, which is part of his thinking mm-hmm. with it. But he could have performed better,
yep.
right? And there are things he could have used his advantages even better. So if he looks at it like that and makes those adjustments, then he can have an even better performance instead of just looking at the result, second round submission.
Yeah,
and
kicked his ass.
Like, Rockhold looked at the result of the Bisping fight in the first match mm-hmm. that they had. I choked him with one arm. A guillotine, you know, and looking at the result of it, you forget what happened in the build up. Aldo and Edgar, to me, is a good example where Aldo beat Edgar first time, and then he beat him more comprehensively second time because he made adjustments
mm-hmm.
for Edgar's game plan and Edgar's tactics, and he put on an even better performance second time around.
He also adapted from the loss to McGregor.
Yeah.
Literally, he did 25 minutes of moving backwards and catching Frankie coming forward. He took the 13-second moment and made it a 25-minute game plan. He really did. And When Sean Tompkins was preparing Hominick for him, we went back and watched all kinds of tape. And for years, McGregor just – or Aldo, it was forward pressure. That's how they built that whole game around. Forward pressure, he'll kick your leg, make you back up. When you back up, he's got left hooks and low kicks, and it was a pressure game.
Yeah.
Nothing but pressure. Could he counterpunch? Sure. If I'm moving forward, I draw something out, he'll counterpunch. But essentially, it was the truest pressure fighter concept was how Dede Pedernera built him. And then after Connor, he goes to fight Frankie the next time, and he is a retreating invite counter you in the space fighter.
Yeah. And he did it very well.
And Mark Henry, Frankie's coach, who I'm a huge fan of, and he's a really cool guy, and I just think he's done brilliant things. He blamed himself for not making the adjustments. They went in, just Aldo had been Aldo for the last 10 years, so they went in to fight that Aldo, and it wasn't that Aldo.
Yeah.
That guy didn't come. Yeah, just, a different guy just came.
Some of those adjustments that Aldo made, and they weren't ready for them. So Nate can make adjustments. He doesn't need to change. Obviously, you don't need to change the whole thing, but just making little subtle adjustments so that the performance is better. He needs to be making sure he does that. Like, I've been thinking about previous rematches that have happened where even Weidman Anderson, Weidman made the adjustments with the leg kicks because he was prepared for them better, and that's why he won the second fight, was the way he checked that kick, because he had been kicked a lot in the first fight.
He talked about it. He said, the only things when we looked for criticism of our performance was I ate way too many leg kicks.
Yeah.
So they worked on, again, most stuff just dates back to Bruce Lee, but the Jeet Kune Do guys talked about limb destruction. We're finding ways to damage your weapon, and that particular outward check is that.
Yeah.
So they built that specifically for you right in that rematch.
Yeah.
So Diaz...
Nick can do the same. Yeah. Like, he can make adjustments to improve his own performance. Mm-hmm. So the shots that Conor was landing, or anticipate what Conor might do in this one, and he's even more prepared, more ready for it, can even put on a better performance. Like, Floyd Mayweather is a good example too, in that sense, where the rematches he's had with Castillo and... what's the other guy? The Argentinian guy. Fought him recently. I can't think of his name now. But like, the first fights were really close, and then he made adjustments. Mm-hmm. And even though he won them both the first time out, second fight was not even close.
Came back with a whole book of information that he had just downloaded by fighting the guy, and made adjustments based on all of that information that he had acquired.
And he put on a better performance in the rematches than he did first time out.
The greats should do that.
Yeah.
You've just been given this incredible... If you've won, and gained, because the gain was all of that experience. We talked about it earlier. Now they've fought each other. You know, I've watched that fight 50 times in slow motion, every angle, every camera angle that I've access to. And I don't know really what any of that felt like. I can't possibly know what that felt like. And if Connor or Nate were not in that fight, or watched a different fight, they could sit with me, they could have access to all this information, they still wouldn't know that the feel of it, the experience of it, is so different. Even if you fought 20 odd times like Connor has and 30 or 40 odd times like Nate has, they know that the feeling is different. Now they have that information. Mm-hmm. Now it's there. Yeah. So mindset-wise, though, Diaz going into this one, we were just touching on it. He can't go in and go, I beat this guy.
Yeah, he can't, not picking on Luke Rockhold, but he can't have that approach where he just thinks he's just better than him. And he thought that going into the first one, and the first one confirmed it. So now he knows he's better than him, and just a matter of turning up. This guy's not in my level. He can't hang with me in any way. That's not what's going to work. He has to have that mindset of those fights that we just mentioned with Floyd and with Weidman and Jose, where they made adjustments. Even though they won the first time out, in the rematch they were better. And that's what he has to do. That's on him now and his team to make sure that that's what he's doing. He can't attribute it to just being better than Connor. He has to remember the mental approach he came in with too. He was ready to go in and dig deep, and he has to have that same thing. Because we've seen Nate put in subpar performances multiple times, which is where he wasn't interested. He wasn't up for it, you know? So he has to be careful of that heading into this one. I can't see that as a thing for him, but it's possible. Has to learn from past fights where the Michael Johnson fight, he was massively up for it. Mm-hmm. The Cowboy fight, he was massively up for it. But then the Dos Anjos fight, he didn't seem to be. Mm-hmm. You know, Ben Henderson fight, even though it's a title fight, he didn't seem to be as in that same place.
Yeah.
So he has to make sure that he's in that place where he wants to be, mm-hmm, to bring that performance like he was first time out. That's on him. That's his responsibility heading into this one. So from Nate's perspective, heading into this one, like the chip on his shoulder to prove it helps that Conor's favorite.
Yeah,
that can help him.
But when we talked about the last time, I used the saying he has nothing to lose.
Yeah,
he has stuff to lose.
Yeah, he has stuff to lose now.
It's literally the opposite.
Yeah,
I got nothing to lose. I'll show up and spank that little guy. Now there's much to lose.
Yeah,
that win, this momentum. You know, maybe some of the celebrity, maybe some of all of the riches that have come.
Yeah,
they can go
just as quickly. Yeah, like there's been plenty of recent examples of guys who got to the top and then they're not there anymore. And mm-hmm. and there's just this new person comes in and you're kind of forgotten. So he has to be willing to go to that place again and be excited as he was for the first one, heading into the second one, as excited to put on a performance and kick on to another level again. So that's a lot for him to be thinking of in this one. Conor heading in has been very like, we can all see it. We can all see the adjustments that he's made with his training and the approach that him and Coach Gavin have made in terms of bringing in bigger guys to spar with. Mm-hmm. That was something that Nate was mocking him in the first fight.
Who are you training with? Who are you training with, bro?
And they're good
who
guys.
Who are you even training with?
Yeah. But Conor's made adjustments where he's brought in specialists, Dylan Danis and some other kickboxers. And
big, long southpaws.
Yeah, and different guys that, bigger guys. So he's made adjustments, preparing specifically for fighting Nate Diaz, which has not been the traditional way of that they've approached fights before. So that's different. Mm-hmm. So that's a big adjustment. So they're taking him lightly, or not expecting him to be any trouble. That's immediately gone now because he just beat you. So you can't have that anymore.
Yeah.
And a danger for Conor, like anyone, is he just got lucky.
Yeah, right.
That's what could happen. I see that a lot. Yeah,
I just got caught.
Yeah,
as they say, you know, I just got caught. That is probably the worst scenario.
Yeah,
because we get nothing from it.
No.
I will always win this one, but there's a 1 out of 100 times I won't. This was that one. I'll just go back to doing what I do.
Yeah, and you've learned nothing from that. So that's an easy excuse that Conor could have had going into this one. I wasn't myself, and he got lucky. It was just the right timing for him. I'll just go in and smoke him this time. If you think that, you won't.
He has to be
ready to go in and execute his game plan perfectly with that sharpness of mind that he'll need to have to be able to go and do it.
Another thing that we referenced earlier in the hour was that he was not mentally prepared to be taken into this deep, exhausting push to that limit thing.
Yeah.
And now he will be.
Yeah.
But he's, other than the one time he went there and failed, he's never really much of his career been there.
No.
So this is new.
Yeah.
You know, so he's got to approach it from that. I hope it happens, but if and when I find myself there, relish it. I get to be in this state.
Yeah,
not
yeah.
I have to.
Yeah.
Oh my God, I get to. You know, thankfully I have this chance to show this.
Yeah.
And he'll have to approach it.
He'll have to have that. Like, he had a little bit of it in the Chad Mendes fight, mm-hmm, I suppose, but not at the same way that Nate brought it. So for sure, that's a big part of it. Now he has, like, he's made the prediction second round because he got asked.
That's a lie.
To predict,
lying.
Yeah. And that's the way it felt a little bit.
Yeah,
because Nate was listening and he's right there and he hasn't had time to think about it. But John, I think, has predicted fourth round.
That
finish.
Makes more sense.
But yeah, so he just heading into this one, he needs to be cautious of the thinking that was there in the first one, that I can knock anyone out with my big left hand and no one can take it. Nate took it, but he can't really take it. Mm-hmm. You know, that could be there, that
right.
it didn't just
I just need a few more shots
at him. One more and he would have been going. I had him going a few times. if he falls into that trap again of trying to prove himself right, you know, from what trying to kind of prove what he thought in the first one as being correct, then he, you know, he could fall into the
just
trap of
do-over.
Yeah,
I did a breakdown with Dan Hardy. Just we hung out and talked about the fight, and he talked about him actually. He was going to predict himself to failure eventually. That the idea that, well, I said I was going to knock him out. Left hand, I knocked him out. Okay, I said I was going to draw him into the space. I drew him into the space. Okay, now I'm going to do a backflip and then go off the cage. And if you keep predicting larger and larger outcomes and really start to pursue them, eventually you'll fail.
Yeah, if you feel like you have to live up to them,
then you're
not doing what's best for yourself in that fight. You're just trying to live up to a prediction.
Not that I want to... John Kavanaugh said he might come on with us after the fight, right? Yeah, so we'll get to ask him about it. But, I think they're smart, clearly. I haven't read John's book yet, but I really am motivated to read it. Because you can tell how smart he is. And Connor seems very intelligent.
Yeah.
And I think clearly when you look at the idea of the predictions, using these predictions, it's a chance to use it in a different way. Eventually, it's not going to come true. It can't be about coming true. You're not actually mystic. You know, it's just been this really neat thing. It's helped you get rich, and it's worked, and sold fights and stuff. But really, it's nonsense. You can't.
People love that stuff.
People love that stuff.
They love it.
But you can't really do it. Yeah. So ultimately, if people think we're going to fail and say we're going to do this and not happen, why don't we use it for a different reason? If Nate Diaz just thinks we're going to fight it the same way, that'll be great. He probably won't, but let's say this anyways. Yeah. The whole predictions thing is over now, but while it's lingering, let's use it.
Yeah.
Every producer that I've ever worked with, producers have a structural job in television. And they like to use mechanisms. Mm-hmm. And one of those mechanisms is, all right, guys, we need your predictions. Personally, I think predicting fighting is crazy. And the more I learn, the more I grow as somebody who consumes fights, the more questions that you ultimately get. And that is forever. And I hope it's forever because curiosity is the greatest thing in the world.
Yeah.
And so predictions don't make any sense. But they're a mechanism that people love. So Connor can use it for that purpose. But I don't think there's any way he actually thinks he's going to get
this. Yeah, and that's something
done.
I've been asked by a lot of people online is about that prediction and all that kind of stuff. So I think, you need to take it with a pinch of salt what he said. But mentally, it's one of those things he needs to be making sure that he is actually – like all the adjustments he's made in preparation and with the way they've prepared for Nate specifically and sparring runs with bigger guys and all the extra conditioning work and all the different stuff they've done, he needs to know that that's not alone going to be enough. He needs mentally to come in ready to go and get and execute that plan and carry out the tactics that are best going to win you the fight.
And do it on the night.
And do it on the night.
And under the knowledge, and we can go back. We talked about it last time we got together, and I talked to Condit about it, and I watched him talk about it, and I've heard him talk about it. Was in that fight, this is the way to win, and this guy and these 16,000 people are trying to convince me not to fight this way.
Yeah, yeah.
But this is the way to win. And he did that.
Yeah.
And Connor has to do that and understand that guy and maybe 16,000 others, depending on how it goes, will all try to influence you to not do the right thing.
Yeah, and that macho kind of testosterone-based thinking and then emotional thinking of, I want to go to war with him and beat him in a war. I want to knock him out with a big shot and beat him in his own game and everything like that can be there, that might probably not the best approach. So he has to fight that urge that would be there. Because the reason they had that kind of fight is because they're both that kind of fighter, you know? So Connor's the one who has to make the biggest adjustments, obviously having a loss. But it's not just working in them in the build-up. It's going and doing it on the night. That's going to be huge. But it's not just the tactics and physically. Then mentally he has to be aware, too, that of where he fell short mentally on the night coming in. I was thinking, again, other rematches like GSP, Matt Serra. GSP recognized that mentally he wasn't where he needed to be in the first fight. And as much as he got caught with a big shot, got knocked out, he knew himself that mentally he wasn't in the right place heading into that first fight. And he made big adjustments mentally for his in preparation so that he went in the rematch. And
it changed him forever.
Yeah,
that,
yeah.
In
yeah.
great, in he should be very thankful he had that fight.
Yeah.
Because much of who he is and the house he's probably in right
he
now.
He didn't lose again, right?
No, he never lost again. And he avenged the only two he ever had.
And people are screaming about the Hendricks fight right now, but I still think he won that fight.
It's interesting. Big John thought that he lost round one. It's all about round one. The other two are definitive. Hendricks's two are badass, too.
Yeah, yeah.
George's two, between two, three, four, and five. George won two, clearly.
It's the scoring system we have.
Round one, Big John, who's an expert, and he's a judging expert, he believes that the big elbows of Hendricks were enough to win him the round compared to George's control.
Mm-hmm.
Hard to disagree with Big John. However, I will disagree with Big John. I mean, he landed three or four elbows, and George ran that fight. But John does define – he is one of the people who defines the judging criteria.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So – it'd be like saying to me, well, that's not a breakdown. It's like, I make breakdowns. So so it's hard to argue with him. However, I'll still gladly argue with him.
Yeah. But it's that close to argue. So if it's that close, then, you know.
But
he made the adjustments, though, from the Serra fight.
Yeah.
And they carried on then. But he knew it wasn't just tactically. It was mentally. He wasn't where he needed to be. Conor has to recognize that part of this as well. So he's made physical adjustments. So he's preparing against bigger guys, he's conditioned differently, and the weight is different in terms of the diet and stuff. John's talked about that even though he can, he doesn't.
Yeah,
he's being more disciplined with it, more strict with it, and tactically they have a different approach, but mentally he needs to have a different different approach too.
Okay, so if I do something, whether it's in how fighting has evolved or within the moment, I do something, there's an answer for that thing. When that answer comes, it creates a new problem for me that I then have to overcome. So we know what Diaz's appropriate mentality would be, and let's say he brings that.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Conor brings the adjustments and the mentality of, in particular, not being alpha, not trying to smash his way through the Diaz wall, dig a hole under it or dissemble it or climb around it or something, but don't just smash through it. So he makes that – let's just say in this scenario, he makes that adjustment. And now that – if Diaz can't force the firefight, the reason we want that firefight is because Diaz wins those fights.
Yeah.
So he made Conor fight a Nate Diaz fight and he won it.
Yeah.
So now Conor changes that and he fights a different fight. Diaz then has to be capable, mentally capable of winning a fight that isn't about balls and testosterone and being tougher and better. He has to win a fight that suddenly then, if Conor could in this reality execute this, it forces Nate Diaz to be capable of winning a thinking fight and a tactical fight. So he's got to be able to that aspect of Conor's got to resist that desire to get caught up in it. If he successfully resists it, Diaz can't just bash harder.
Yeah.
He's got to resist, reassess, adjust, and not just try to smash his way through either. He's got to be able to adjust in that scenario.
And the fact that we're talking about it now, and it appears obvious when you look at it like that, means that Nate's camp and Nate himself needs to be looking at that too and be you can be prepared for that. It sounds like you're making adjustments on the fly, but if you can anticipate that, then they're not on the fly, and you can have plan A and plan B and know when
and
to
C.
go and know when to go with which and know which times which are appropriate and which ones to use. So it's against his instincts and everything.
It's identity.
To fight that way. But if that's what is needed in that moment, and no amount of calling Conor a bitch and slapping him is getting him to get away from what's if in this scenario Conor is winning the rounds.
Yeah. If that is
just play that out.
We go to Condit. Nick tried to Nick Diaz Condit into fighting that way.
Yeah.
Yelling at him, pointing at him, making fun of him. But what you saw was Nick's frustration.
Yeah.
No adaptation. I'm sure it would be different now because he's had that experience. But no adaptation to the new problem, just frustration and trying to will it to happen and it didn't happen. Yeah. So Nate can't find himself in that
spot. He has to be able to adjust. Like, I think Nate had it himself against Benson, a little bit of that.
And RDA, I think.
But he needs to make adjustments and and be prepared mentally to be able to go to those places and be excited about it. Mm-hmm. About like you were saying, Conor has to be excited about pushing to that mm-hmm. that point of breaking and keep going and in terms of the conditioning and all that kind of stuff. But Nate has to be excited about going in there and showing a more full rounded game where he doesn't need to turn into a war to win. He can win with his skill set, because he can. He has a lot of skills. Mm-hmm. And he can make the fight a different fight if he adjusts and wants to get it to the ground or whatever he might be thinking of doing. So he has to be prepared for having different adjustments mid-fight.
It's going to be killer.
Yeah.
You know, we're still more than a week out, and there's still a lot to go. But this has been really interesting to approach it this way. So it's interesting because, like I mentioned, I have two breakdowns. You saw them.
Yeah.
And I took one from each perspective, but looking at it from where they were then, what changes have made and what we could anticipate. There's also going to be stuff that we can't anticipate, and they certainly can't anticipate that are going to happen, the unknown unknowns.
Yeah.
And they've got to be ready for that as well. It really is a fascinating one. When I did the breakdown, I don't reference Conor kicking his leg because there aren't any shots of it, and Conor never did a lot in the past.
Yeah.
But I bet you there's an insane amount of leg kicks going on. There's also no footage of them training that, but you know that. It's just such an important weapon. Also, body work. He's mm-hmm. going to work his body, and he's going to work his legs way, way, way more.
Yeah.
So Diaz has to be ready for that likelihood, whether it's tactically prepared. And you see adjustments that he has made over the last three or four years. It was both he and his brother stood heavy on the front and just unloaded on you, put so much at you that you had to either back up or engage them. It was perfect until people started kicking the leg because it was so heavy. They're so out front. Their body was so out front over that leg. Diaz doesn't do that anymore. You see him slide back. They've adjusted that. You've even seen him check the odd kick. I mean, first Condit and then Benson, Condit with his brother, Benson, and an RDA, you either are going to go, well, if people kick our legs, we're going to lose, or you change. And they have changed. This idea that kicking Diaz's leg is an automatic work, that's not true.
Yeah.
That's not true at all. And McGregor and John will know that, but there's going to be more leg kicks. And it's, again, like saying, using a prediction in a way that people think you are this thing and use the prediction as a lie. The fact that he doesn't throw leg kicks is the best reason to throw leg kicks.
Yeah,
you know what I mean?
Yeah.
If you were preparing for Conor McGregor, you'd be preparing for his left hand, for his distance, for the games that he plays, his space management, all those kinds of things. You wouldn't be preparing for leg kicks. Mm-hmm. So they have to kind of be preparing for that because it's going to happen.
And so does Nate on the opposite side, where he can be looking to counter that look for a takedown off it or whatever he wants to do, check them and let him know that that's not going to work. I'm ready for that, which can then have in-fight mental battle where you thought this was going to work and now it's not. So, you know.
Maybe I'll just go back to trying to smash my way through the wall now.
Yeah, exactly. You know? So to me, it's I know that everyone is excited by just casual fans, but hardcore fans are too. It's just... Everything about it is fascinating.
Yeah.
You know, it's not for a title, and it's in a weight class that neither guy fights at really. But it doesn't matter. None of that stuff matters.
No.
It's just historically, it's a great fight. It's a huge fight, and the what we just talked about, going like all that happened in the first fight, the build up to it, and the aftermath of it, it all just adds to this now.
Mm-hmm.
It really does.
Yeah, it's true, and we have literally sat for an hour. More, an hour and 50 minutes, and talked about one fight that existed for 9 minutes and 12 seconds.
Yeah.
And that is incredible. And it's not just because we're total nerds. This fight really has all those things. And you kind of hope that when people talk – and not everybody wants to dig this deep into things. Not everybody wants to look at it that way. There'll be 1.5 million people watch this fight.
Yeah.
And probably 100,000 or two will care beyond, you know, a couple hundred thousand may care – beyond that.
Yeah.
Bunch of people get together. They watch that Irish guy and that Diaz guy smash each other in the face. One of them wins. That's it. But
there'll be a lot more actually than 1.5 million because that's just the pay-per-view buys.
Right,
there's
right.
Worldwide, this is a big fight.
Right. Yeah. So if each one of those is 5 people, you're already at 7.5 million. Then you've got bars. You got 10 million.
Yeah, yeah.
You've got 5 million more. Watch the highlights the next day. You're right. It really is. And it should. These should be. I say this all the time, but these are moments in time where you've taken the best, some of the best in the world, all of the knowledge that's been analyzed and created and brought together, and you take these people and you make them work and you place them in this thing and we all watch. Uh-huh. If you've ever seen a bunch of ants walking, sometimes uh-huh. you'll see like a long row of ants and there'll be like a little spot where a whole bunch of ants kind of go off to the side. I always figure there's a fight happening like that. And they all kind of gathered around to kind of check it out. And whatever they were doing, we had to stop because that was happening. This is one of those fights. Like yeah. all the ants should stop. And it's going to be a really, really, really cool one. Yeah. Any last
the other little bit from it in the build up which is different, I think an adjustment has already been made, is the trash talking mm-hmm. that Conor, he's still doing it mm-hmm. but I think it's just fun and there's a lot of respect between both guys. I think they like each other. You know?
Well, yeah. You don't come across somebody that much like you on some levels that people don't understand you very often in your life. You know
yeah,
I mean?
Yeah, yeah. They're drawn to each other in some way. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of respect there at the very least.
Yeah.
So that it's still there, the heavy bag with mm-hmm. eyes and all that stuff. Mm-hmm. But that's just, you know, that's just Conor being Conor.
But selling fights.
Yeah, but I think that stuff is a little different. It's just that's not going to work. Let's get down to business now mm-hmm. and go and put in the performance. So I think that adjustment has already been made. By McGregor heading in.
It's going to be good. We'll have to plan to see if we can get together as early in the week as possible after that.
But. Yeah, I'm the week after it'll have to because I'm away in Europe that week, so it'll be the week after.
Okay, so what we're going to – and I go and call Shudo that weekend, but we'll make it work. What we're going to have to do then is by the time we get together, it'll be 9 days or so after. We've got to have some shit that, like, is on another level.
Yeah.
Like, we can't – you know, we've got to be able to really – dig in and really deeply analyze and we'll work on it. While you're gone, I've got a few little ideas that I wanted to break out of how to analyze a certain thing. I'll mm-hmm. tell you about it off after we're done. And maybe we'll try to break out some new ideas. And we'll try to talk to John Kavanaugh.
Yeah, yeah, yeah,
so
yeah.
That'll give us a reason. And we'll be able to dig in with that.
Yeah, yeah. So. That'd be cool.
So I think that was like an hour and 15 minutes. We're going to do a short piece, a 5-minute piece that we're going to a friend of ours is going to put on the internet after, so watch for that. We're going to do that right now. But I'll tell you about that next time. But thank you so much for sharing time with us and hanging out with us. I hope you enjoy this fight as much as we are going to. David Mullins, DavidMullinsSportsPsychology.com, David Mullins MMA on Twitter. I'm Robin Black, and enjoy the hostilities, my friends.